The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
He's also abandoning principles he's held for decades. Now he says your tax dollars should fund abortions.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. It's a delight to be here with you this afternoon, as always. And you are welcome to join in on the conversation anytime. The number here is 888-914-9149. Always trying to give you a look at life that you're not going to find anywhere else. And I read a couple of articles recently, and I'll try to get them on your radar. One is by my next guest, Bob Riley, who's going to be stopping by. You can do a search for him. So if you do search Robert Riley. I think that's the name he uses when he writes. And it's called Voice of America's Dysfunction Corrupts News Organization's Mission, Giving Voice to America, Explaining Its Purpose. Great read. I just went through that. I also want to talk about the Biden administration and their effort to suppress the laws of nature and nature's God. I just came across a great article, and you take a look at a lot of what's happening in the country right now, and it, in my opinion, it boils down to this. It really does. Again, you can join us, 888-914-9149. In fact, let's start with our founding fathers. Thomas Jefferson, right? One who penned the Declaration of Independence. I mean, what an incredibly eloquent and profound work. Jefferson said this in the very first sentence. He says, when in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with one another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. That's so eloquent, isn't it? You love that. That phrase, the laws of nature and of nature's God, that is really important because it shows that the founders, well, they were basing their actions not on their own emotions or the latest intellectual trends like we see today, right? But on something much more objective, something much more substantial, on the reading of the natural law. And you might say, well, what's natural law? I never heard of that, right? Well, the natural law is something that we Catholics have been talking about and discussing for centuries. Back in 1991, Senator Joe Biden, who was at the time the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, he thought he knew what it was all about when he was questioning Clarence Thomas about becoming a Supreme Court justice. And it's always fun to hear Joe Biden, right? When he's young, he had a lot of vigor, a lot of vitality to his voice. Let me share this. Here he is at that hearing. Listen to what Joe Biden said.
Not a single legal scholar in America fails to understand the significance of whether and if how one applies natural law. Judge Bork devoted a chapter in his book about how those people who want to apply natural law are bad, not bad in a moral sense, are wrong. There's an entire school of thought that you are fully familiar with. I'm not failing to accept your answers yesterday. I just want to make sure we all know what we're talking about here, that you and I know at least what we're talking about here. There's not a single legal scholar who does not understand that there's a fervent, bright, and aggressive school of thought that wishes to see natural law further inform the Constitution than it does now, argued against by the positivists led by Judge Bork. Now, again, that may be lost on all the people. You know and I know what we're talking about. Now, all I'm out to do in my second round, and others are, is to find out whether you, in fact, do apply natural law, and if you do, how. You answered that partially yesterday. I'm somewhat confused. I'll come back to it. But let the record know, for all the press to know, whether someone applies natural law is of phenomenal significance. And there's not a single legal scholar in America you can question who will not tell you that is not true.
It's a lot of words, right? Did you get any of that? Could you understand what Joe Biden was saying? What is natural law? What's the church teach? I mean, and again, I often say there's two books that belong on your library, in your library. One is the Bible. The other is the Catechism of the Catholic Church. And the Catechism will answer just about any question you have. The Catechism affirms that natural law is this. It says it's present in the heart of each man and established by reason. He says this law is universal in its precepts, and its authority extend to all men. It expresses the dignity of the person and determines the basis for this fundamental right and duties. It's in this natural law that we find moral truths to inform life altogether. It's written on the human heart, is what it is, right? And our founding fathers understood this. Thomas Jefferson understood this. You heard Joe Biden raising these questions, asking, you know, Justice Clarence Thomas about it. There was a film about Justice Thomas. I think it's called Created Equal. And Thomas says this. He says, one of the things you do in hearings is you have to sit there, you have to look attentively at people that you know have no idea what they're talking about. I think he was referring perhaps to Joe Biden. Unfortunately, Joe Biden still doesn't know what he's talking about on natural law because he keeps violating it. You heard the other day when we spoke about this issue. And again, I'm not here to bash or beat up Joe Biden. I'm just here as a Catholic to point out, you know, some of the insanity that we're seeing, you know, the attack on our faith. You heard the other day his, you know, I respectfully disagree. You know, they have this respectful disagreement with the bishops about using aborted fetal tissue for experiments. How do you respectfully disagree on that point? Huh? That's, to me, it's just not Catholic. But you know, it's much more than that. Hey, I'm joined today by Bob Riley. He's the director of the Westminster Institute. You can find him and find more at westminster-institute.org. And he's taught Natural Defense University. He's taught at the National Defense University, I should say, and written a number of books. He's been with us in the past. His latest book, you may want to check this out. It's called America on Trial, A Defense of the Founding. America on Trial, Defense of the Founding. He joins us today to take a look at this issue and so much more. Hey, Bob, thank you for your time. It's great to have you with us.
Drew, it's wonderful to be back with you, and I thought that was a great reading of the preamble in the Declaration.
Well, thank you. Look, it's such an eloquent document, isn't it? I mean, you take a look at what Jefferson wrote. Unbelievable. And, you know, he talks about, you know, natural law, of course, the laws of nature, I should say, and nature's God. Let's talk about that. Give us a basic understanding of what natural law is and how the founders would have understood it, because they wouldn't necessarily look at it from a Catholic perspective. But how did the founding fathers see it? And, of course, you know, they wrote about it.
Well, natural law, of course, is something that human beings arrived at through the use of their reason and through philosophy. It's not a sectarian teaching. It's not necessarily Catholic,
right. Though
there are certain religious sects who reject it. You know, if you're a solo fide person, you don't think you can know the difference between right and wrong through your reason, but only through Scripture, right? But that was not the general impression. From Aristotle through Thomas Aquinas to our founders, the laws of nature were those things that directed man toward his end. What was his end? Unanimously, they said happiness. Mm-hmm. How do you reach that end? Through a life of virtue. Do we know what virtue is? Yes, it's the opposite of vice. It means behaving reasonably, according to reason, being ruled by reason. As Aquinas said, the nature of sin is its irrationality. Now, it's natural law that let Aristotle know what virtue was, that let Cicero know. Right. Cicero had a huge influence on the American founding. Our founders meant by that they knew the ends of man, and government was instituted according to those natural laws and could never contravene them, particularly regarding the ends toward which human beings are ordered by nature. Which is what the problem is in that great article by Father Portella that you mentioned. Right. He gives the list of the ways in which the Biden administration is subverting natural law.
Yeah, it's such a great article, too. We're going to post it and link over it so people can check it out as well. Natural law arguments aren't ones that you have on a regular basis. So how do you learn those arguments? And then maybe we could talk about it. How do we know that natural law tells us marriage is only between, let's say, one man and one woman? I just finished a conversation on no-fault divorce and how that may be changing. But your thoughts on that, how can you explain that?
Well, you know, Drew, I actually wrote a book on that very subject, the natural law argument against homosexual marriage. And the thing is, if man is ordered to certain ends, his sexual powers are ordered to certain ends too. What are they? They're generative and they're unitive. So any use of your sexual powers out of those two purposes is unnatural. The argument we get for homosexual marriage or any other kind of sexual deviation is based on the fact that they claim that sex isn't ordered to any end and therefore can be used for entertainment or for any other purpose one would wish. But it's, you know, what's so amusing about this?
What?
There are people say, well, we don't know. We know what our eyes are for, our ears are for, and our other bodily organs. But once you get below the waist, well, who knows what that's for?
Right.
We can't figure that out. But there are fertility clinics sprinkled across the landscape in the United States of people who can't conceive, who want to, who are therefore seeking the help of a doctor. Well, how, you mean, our sexual powers may be related to fertility, may be related to the creation of children? Well, I think so. It's just natural law in that respect is common sense. Homosexual marriage, abortion, and all of these other things are a violation of that natural law and of those rights which were so eloquently expressed as coming from God in our own Declaration of Independence.
That's such a great point. My call screener, Patrick, is saying he loved what you just said. He'd never heard the use of body parts like that before. And I think it is a great point. If you want to join us, I only have my guest today, Bob Riley, for a few more minutes. You can get in, 888-914-9149. We're taking a look at how the Biden administration really is violating the natural law. You know, 30 years ago, did Joe Biden, in that clip that we played, know what he was talking about when it came to the natural law? You heard him, you know, hammering Justice Thomas or future Justice Thomas there in that particular piece, because he was pretty adamant about it.
Well, at least he made one clear distinction about positivism. In other words, that law is simply an expression of command or of will.
Right.
And indeed, Bork was not a natural law man. That was Bork's one big limitation. He was at least a good constitutional scholar. And the other view is that, no, law is an expression of reason. And through our reason, we discover the natural law. And you can't have a positive law, that is a law we pass in a legislature, that is in contradiction of the natural law, because it's then no law. Whether you want to go to Cicero or Thomas Aquinas or our founders, they would say that law obtains its legitimacy insofar as it coheres with the natural law. And of course, the natural law is in a hierarchical relationship with divine law.
Yeah. You know, you were just talking about marriage and Biden, you know, or same-sex marriage. Joe Biden witnessed the attempted nuptials of two guys who were working for him. It seems like an obvious question, but that violates, of course, the natural law. What other things is he doing right now in terms of the administration? And as a Catholic, you know, I have concerns. He said the other day that he has a respectful disagreement with the bishop on things like the experimentation of fetal remains. To me, that is extremely disrespectful, especially to those fetal remains. But he respectfully disagrees with the church, the bishops, on that particular issue. Your thoughts on the administration, and now that he's president of the United States and he's taken all kinds of executive actions, are we witnessing these actions violate natural law on a lot of different fronts?
Yeah, that's why I think that article in Crisis was so good by Father Portella, because he goes down the list of the things, including the establishment of this hilariously named Gender Policy Council in the White House,
yep.
which, of course, is to promote the LGBT agenda and so forth. And his full support for transgenderism,
yep.
including regarding children. So we're talking about, he says transgender rights are human rights. But how could you have a human right to deface yourself as a human, to mutilate your body so that you can pretend or your parents can pretend along with you that you have a different sex than the one which that with which you were born? That you're not a boy or a little girl, and that, in fact, everyone has to acknowledge this change because it's a human right. My wife had an experience recently. One of her friends had a neighbor come over
yeah.
with her little girl, whom she now thinks is a little boy, and demanded that the woman apologize for her two sons, little grade school sons, who refused to use the new pronoun for this little girl who now thinks she's a little boy.
Oh, wow.
So that's the way the social enforcement is
wow.
is working. I talked to a Marine officer who was told by his battalion commander that the adjutant in the unit would be coming back after recovering from surgery, and Jill would now be known as Jim and referred to by the new pronoun, you see, which operation, of course, was done courtesy of the Navy Department and the U.S. Taxpayer. So now you see the military enforces the lie.
Yeah.
As this officer told me, if he would resign his commission before he would engage in the lie. So it's at any cost, they will enforce this lie about humanity, this lie about our nature as sexual human beings.
Yeah. And we're seeing
it. They're enforcing it, and Biden is full bore in doing this.
I couldn't agree with you more. I shared a story at the very beginning of the broadcast today about about Governor Newsom, and he signed the Transgender Respect Agency and Dignity Act. It's a bill which would allow incarcerated so-called transgender, the terminology they use are non-binary and intersex people, to be housed and searched in a manner consistent with their gender identity. So what's that mean? It basically means that about 200 men have asked to be transferred to women's prisons, you know, and every single one of those requests has been granted. I mean, every single one of them, 200 men saying, hey, I want to get out of this place. It's a bunch of guys that do nothing but fight and argue, and it's horrible, and now they get to be transferred to a women's prison. I mean, this is the insanity of this. And, of course, you know, we have the Equality Act that's, going to transform things on so many different fronts. Let me grab a quick call because I know we only have a few moments. The number here if you want to get in, 888-914-9149. Wausau, Wisconsin is on deck. Ben, hi, you're on the air with Bob Riley.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Your caller spoke a lot about divine law and natural law and how they relate should be dictating positive law, but in the country that we live in, the world we live in today, where there isn't that, I guess, regard for natural and positive and divine laws driving positive law, how do we reconcile that with, you know, the you know, half of the population that doesn't really, I guess, believe that that's how we should drive our decisions?
That's such a
great
point.
How do we kind of close that gap?
Yeah. Hey, Bob, pick up on that. You know, you have this radical divide. Most people don't even know what natural law is. They don't believe in divine law. How do you reconcile that when you have such a polarized nation?
Well, I'd have to say, and this answer may surprise you a little because it's not a natural law answer, I think without a recovery of faith in this country, we're sort of toast. You know,
yeah.
Several decades before the American founding, there was the Great Awakening.
Yeah.
And I think the Great Awakening provided a foundation for what became the American founding. And unless we undergo a recovery of faith in this country, we're toast, because all the founders were unanimous in saying this republic will not survive without a virtuous people. And the nursery for virtue is religion. So you lose religion, you lose your virtue, and you lose your republic. And that's what's happening to us today. So how do you resolve that? Well, you first of all, you refuse to lie. You tell the truth, and you tell what the source of truth is in the laws of nature and of nature's God.
Yeah, I think it's so well said. I totally agree with that. I often quote the Founding Fathers and what they said on how, you know, the success of this nation depends on a virtuous people. And if we do not have virtue, you said it best, we're toast. Because what happens when you lack virtue? It's vice, and vice is destructive. You know, I don't know who said it, what Founding Father who said, you know, our Constitution is made only for a moral and religious people, and it's wholly inadequate, you know, to the government of any other. And that's so true. And you see where we are right now. RJ is listening in San Francisco. RJ, hi, you're on the air with Bob Riley. Good afternoon. I'm sorry, I didn't fire you up. That's my fault, RJ. Hi, go right ahead. You're on the air, yeah. RJ. My fault.
Okay. You know, I'm just wondering here, when are we going to fight back? I am sick and tired of this. And I'm sure that half of the entire United States is. When are we going to fight back about these people? They're a minority, you know, and let them know how we feel that we don't want this for our country.
All right.
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, it's not just that this tiny minority is an expression of a radical moral disorder, but the moral disorder is more widely spread, and it's shared generally through the media and largely in the academy. So, you know, the Chinese saying that a fish rots from the head, mm-hmm. The head in this country has rotted insofar as the academy and the media are concerned, and they've undermined the fundamental truths on which this country is based. And you fight back through a restoration of these truths and by refusing to lie and refusing to be suborned by the lie and by these mechanisms of enforcement that the Biden administration is using and the social enforcement of the people who have bought into the lie and have a vested interest in it, because it allows them to rationalize their own misbehavior. So it's a very tough slog, and you're in San Francisco where it's an even tougher slog.
That's for sure. Hey, I only have a couple seconds left, but I want to make sure people get plugged in. Your book, America on Trial, A Defense of the Founding, where can people get that?
Well, I hate to say Amazon, but you can get it there, or you can go to Ignatius Press website or any other booksellers.
Sounds great. Hey, Bob, thank you. Always a great conversation. Appreciate your intellect.
God bless you, too.
God bless you.
Thank you so much.
America on Trial, A Defense of the Founding by Robert Riley. Pick it up. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Your Catholic vote and your Catholic voice lives here.
Republican or Democrat or independent.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and on your Relevant Radio app.
That's right, and a platform for all people. That's how I like to have it here. I like to look at the issues of the day through a moral framework, and that crosses both sides of the aisles, whether we're talking politics, whether we're talking natural law, whatever the issue may be. And I always try to give you a look at something that is important to you and will impact you. And I was reading a little bit about where we are today in terms of being online and how it has really altered society. And I think this is going to be a great conversation. I hope you turn up the radio. If you have to run, be sure to go to my podcast. You can listen to anything that happened today, and you can get caught up on this conversation, too, in just a moment. Dr. Gene Twenge is going to be stopping by. I saw a study. You know, I often check these Pew Research studies, and they came out with one last month. Let me just share this with you. And the study said, as smartphones and other internet-connected devices have become more widespread, 31% of U.S. adults now report that they go online almost constantly. That's up 21% from 2015. 85% of Americans say they go online on a daily basis. Let me just stop there because there's more. Where are you? And I'll tell you, I'm in that category. I'm online all the time. It's part of my job. And I left the studio the other day without my cell phone. And I was flying out of the state. I had to turn around. I went to the loss, the thought of missing my flight to get my cell phone. That's how attached I am with people contacting me, information that comes in. I mean, it's kind of crazy. I thought I was never like that before. But, you know, I was halfway to the airport and I had to go back and get my phone. We are super connected. Again, as smartphones and other internet-connected devices become more widespread, 31% of U.S. adults now report they go online almost constantly, up 21% from 2015. Goes on to say 85% of Americans go online at least on a daily basis. You're probably in that category, right? That figure includes the 31% who report going online almost constantly, as well as 48% who say they go online several times a day, and 6% who go online once a day. A lot of numbers. I know it can get kind of busy. Given what happened with the pandemic, which literally shut down and practically forced us to go online, how many of you are sick of Zoom conference calls, right? Or just, hey, maybe you're now hooked. Maybe you never used to go online. Maybe you weren't a Netflix watcher, or maybe you didn't spend that much time on podcasts or other things. But maybe now, because of the pandemic, you realized, wow, there's a whole new digital world out there. And I bet these numbers are going to be even bigger when they look at these in the future. I know my own wife, who's not really a technophile, has been using digital media a lot more than she ever has. I commented it on the other day. And I used to have to walk her through everything, right? Now she's becoming pretty proficient. But, you know, that's COVID, right? And I think we are we're seeing more connectivity. Pure Research, that study came out to me, is not a surprise. You know, you weren't able to go to weddings or funerals or church services or music festivals. You weren't able to go to your office. There was no public gatherings, right? So what did you do? And many of you had Christmas over Zoom, right? You put off the wedding. You barely, you know, you went from a barely known internet conference company to a household word, you know, Zoom. That's what happened. Other internet companies that were similar services also did well. I mean, package delivery companies had a boon, right? How many of you started shopping on Amazon for the first time and now you're hooked? Now everything you buy is on Amazon. I know a lot of people said, oh my gosh, I never would shop online. Now they're loving it. They're like, oh my gosh, this was great. Well, I can't believe I missed it. We're seeing how the pandemic, I think, has really accelerated this and opened a new world for people. The online world, it's useful. It's useful to get you through that time. There's also dangers, though. And I do want to talk about this just briefly, because I think there is a danger of going too far in one direction, becoming an extremist in either direction. And there's when there's no one to challenge what you're thinking in a good way. Jim Garrity, he writes for National Review. I saw something he wrote. He pointed out a piece recently, and he says, online discourse is almost coarser, cruder, and meaner than offline discourse. And I think you'd probably agree with that, right? And the reason I think that's the case, I think of people being in their cars. You talk about road rage. Sometimes people feel more emboldened. They're beeping their horns or flipping the bird, right? Because you're surrounded by this armor, right? You're in this vehicle. You feel isolated. I think the same thing happens online. I think people feel they're not meeting the person eye to eye. They're not seeing the person blush or get angry. And the dialogue has become coarser, cruder, and meaner. I think he's absolutely right. But there's also something we're missing. You know, you're not able to see one another face-to-face and be able to touch or smell or laugh with the person or read their body language. And, you know, you might see them on a screen, but I still think something gets lost. So getting back to normal in this country, the question is, will it take a while? Or when the doors open and things resume, are we just going to get back in the saddle? I don't know. I do not know. Gene Twenge is the author of iGen. Why today's super-connected kids are growing up less rebellious, more tolerant, less happy, and completely unprepared for adulthood. I invited her today to stop by and give us some perspective. And you can find her online. Her website is Gene Twenge. It's TWENGE.com. All right? So check her out. Hey, good to have you with us today, Doctor. Thank you for your time.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You know, your thoughts on this. I mean, you've been documenting for some time now how the use of devices impacts our kids. And more than ever, you know, we're seeing this. So they're so connected. Did the shutdown impact them less? Did it impact them the same? Did it impact them more? Because I think there's a lot of adults who are really impacted by it. But your thoughts on that, how it affected the different demographics.
Yeah, well, we were in an interesting position with teens, you know, even before the pandemic. You mentioned that stat on being online almost constantly. Well, the Pew Center looked at teens, and that was that was half of teens in 2018. Can you imagine what that number would be now for teens always being online? However, there were some weird advantages of the pandemic for teens. They got to take a breath and get more sleep and not be running around with their extracurricular activities and getting on the bus early in the morning and all kinds of stuff. They got to spend more time with family, which they do like, even when they say that they don't. Big survey that I did with the Institute for Family Studies, we found that 2/3 of the teens in our sample said they felt the pandemic had brought them closer to their families. And there's also a huge increase in the number who said they were getting enough sleep. So even though the pandemic was no fun for anybody overall, there were some silver linings for teens. We also found they weren't necessarily spending that much more time online. I mean, certainly they were for school, but in their free time, they had only increased their digital media time by a little bit. It wasn't, you know, anything that was going to was that unusual. Probably because they were already spending so much time, you know, 6 to 9 hours a day of their leisure time online already before the pandemic. So they were kind of in dress rehearsal for the whole thing. Wow. They already knew how to do everything online.
That's amazing. The data is telling, you know, and you probably can't answer this. I'm going to throw it to you anyway, though. I often wonder, because this generation, the past few, you know, the millennials today and even back, I'm hearing unprecedented numbers of kids who have anxiety disorder or they're battling depression. We see the suicide numbers going through the roof. Mm-hmm. And I've often just wondered, and I don't know whether it's some sort of neurological impact from the stimuli that comes from the screens or whatever. I have no idea. But have you done any analysis of whether or not screen time is directly correlated to anxiety, depression, or suicide?
Yeah, that's one of the things that I look at the most in the book, in iGen, because that's what I'm really, really started to document that really made me realize we had a new generation on our hands a little earlier than we thought. There's this pronounced increase in adolescent depression and anxiety and self-harm and suicide that began around 2012, right, when the smartphones became common and social media kind of moved from optional to mandatory. Right at that time, that's with folks born in the mid-1990s and later. So that's iGen or Gen Z.
Yeah.
That's where you see that huge increase in depression and anxiety. So that, of course, begs the question, well, why? Why did it increase then? And it kept going. The latest data we have in those cases is from 2019. It doubled. Teen depression doubled between 2011 and 2019, which is an enormous increase. And I don't think it's a coincidence that that happened at the time that smartphones and social media were becoming the most common way to communicate. So that also then you have to say, well, that's at the level of the generation. Right. What happens at the level of individuals? The kids who are spending more time online, are they more depressed? And they are.
Wow.
So studies vary, but basically if you look at the kids who, you know, use technology but use it in a limited way, they're spending, you know, an hour or two a day, say, on their phones or on social media, compare them to those who are spending 5 hours a day or more. Kids who are spending 5 hours a day or more, about twice as likely in most cases to be depressed or anxious. Not always at clinical levels, but still, there's a noticeable difference. And it's not using it a little that's the problem. It's using it a lot. But the problem is so many teens use those technologies for so many hours a day.
Do we have any understanding as to what it is about the technology or the device that is causing this? Is it a sense of isolation or is it something neurological? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. And we don't completely know, but I think there's a couple of really good possibilities. One, especially at those very high levels of use, you know, if you're on your phone almost all of your free time, you're probably not sleeping enough, and you're probably not interacting with people face-to-face as much as you would be if social media wasn't the default. So, and sure enough, both those things have happened with teens. You look at iGen compared to millennials and Gen Xers, much less likely to hang out with their friends face-to-face. And this was even before the pandemic. They also sleep less. So those are two things that are really beneficial, seeing friends in person, sleeping, and they're doing them less. So that's one big piece of it. I think a lot of it, as you mentioned, is how toxic things are online, that people say things on social media and online that they would never say to somebody's face. And it's very polarizing. There's a lot of cyberbullying, and it just has this negativity to it that is, it just seems much more common online to have that kind of negativity. In person, you know, we're all kind of wimps. You know, we don't want to, like, say these things to people when we can see the look on their face, but we'll do it online.
Yeah, you know, I remember somebody who was struggling with suicidal thoughts, say these ideations, and they went online just to look at the best way to take their life. And they shared the story with me, and they said, you know, when I went on there, I couldn't believe there wasn't somebody out there saying, hey, don't do this. You know, it's okay. Life's worth living. You're going to get through this. They were telling people, you know, they were giving them things like dress up in black and stand in a busy intersection. I mean, they were telling them, well, I won't go into the details of what they were saying, but I mean, some really horrible things. And I'm thinking, what a dark place. I mean, and I don't want to paint it all as dark because there's probably a lot of good out there, too.
Yeah.
Is there a brighter side to this as well? Are our kids learning more? Are they doing better in academics? Or is social media, is this iGen, are they facing challenges like we've never faced before?
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, those increases in depression are so large and happen in such a short period of time that they're really, really concerning. And, you know, as a parent and also just as a human being, that's one of the things that bothers me the most. It's not just the amount of time they're spending on it. It's that they can literally go and find out how to starve themselves or hurt themselves. It's horrible. But you're right. There's plenty of positives as well. It's so difficult, especially if you have kids, to try to say, hey, look, there's this amazing world out there where you can access so much information, almost all the information in the world. I mean, imagine, you know, if you're a Gen Xer like me, how wonderful that would have been in 1988 to not have to go to the library or it's amazing what you can do and how you can talk to people around the world and everything that you can learn. I mean, that's the internet, you know?
Yeah.
The internet is great because you have access to everything. The internet is also terrible because you have access to everything.
Yeah. Hey, there's a lot to talk about. Let me open the phones, too. We'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll grab some calls. I'm approaching the final segment of my time with you today. So if you want to join the conversation, you know the number, right? It's 888-914-9149. You can get in the conversation with Dr. Jean Twenge. She is the author of a book called iGen. You may want to check it out. You can get it at her website or Amazon. Again, the full title, iGen, Why Today's Super-Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. And you might have kids. You might be concerned about it. This is a good read for you. So you can check that out. We're back in a second, so stay with us. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
This is the Drew Mariani Show. Where else can you get news and issues of the day from a Catholic lens? Keep it here on Relevant Radio.
All right, great to be back. That tune, I don't know what it is. Sounds like Led Zeppelin to me, Jake. I don't know where you got that bumper. I like that. Very forward-leaning. Hey, it's good to be with you today. I'm Drew Mariani, and I'm joined today by Dr. Jean Twenge, and we are taking a look at how being online is impacting and altering society. Maybe you have experienced it. Maybe you're living with it right now. Maybe you got a loved one that is struggling with anxiety or depression or suicidal ideations or self-harm. We're seeing more and more of that. And Dr. Twenge's done a lot of research, wrote a book called iGen, and you can check that out at her website or online. And doctors, we talk about these things. I often think, well, you know, what's a practical solution? There's a lot of parents who say, gosh, I have got X amount of kids and one suffers anxiety and everybody else is fine, or I've got two kids who are depressed all the time. Or I mean, what can a powerless parent who's listening right now, because that's how they feel when a child has anxiety and they need either medication or therapy or something, they don't know how, they don't know how to solve the problem for their kid, what can they do?
Yeah, I have three kids myself, and you're totally right. They're all different, and You know, it is somewhat hard to find rules that work for everybody. But I think there's two rules that work for everybody. The only thing you have to keep in mind is it's not just for kids. It's also for you as well.
Yeah.
Number one is no devices in the bedroom overnight. So your phone, your tablet, have a charging station away from the bedrooms, downstairs, someplace. After lights out, those go down there for the whole family, if at all possible. For adults, sometimes it's not getting, you're not going to pull it off. But your teen, you know what? Doesn't need to be texting at 2 o'clock in the morning. And they often do when their parents think that they're sleeping. So good night's sleep, extremely important for physical and mental health. So that's one really straightforward thing that you can do. And then another is just to limit the use of technology. So you probably don't want to give it up as an adult, neither does your teen. This is not surprising.
Right.
Technology's awesome. It can do the coolest things. I couldn't go to the airport without my phone either. It has my boarding pass on it,
right,
among other things,
right,
which is great. But most families do well coming up with some rules. One is, let's not be looking at devices right up until bedtime because it stimulates the mind, stimulates the body, then you can't fall asleep. So within about an hour of bedtime, try to do something else. Then, you know, maybe no phones at the dinner table. Kids love it if that's adults too, if you can pull that off.
Right.
Just have these spaces that are technology-free zones or technology-free times. And then just try to think more mindfully about how you're using your technology of, okay, you know, I'm going to do this for a little bit because I like it, right, but then I'm going to go do something else. So that's the rule in my house, you know. One movie, cool. After that, go do something else. Go play a game on your computer, okay, but for like about a half an hour, right, then go read a book. That it doesn't take over all of your free time.
Yeah. It's, you know, the challenge for parents, because I have five kids, and they were all about, I mean, we had five in like 6 years or something, my wife and I. The challenge is sometimes the computer, the television, whatever it might be, the phone, is a babysitter, you know. And I know a lot of parents that I say, oh, you know, watch this movie or go do this or do that. It can be hard. You know, I wish in retrospect, because my kids are now young adults. They grew up in the early 90s. They were born in the early 90s. That we were more diligent also just in terms of television, but it wasn't as prolific as it is today. I mean, every kid has a cell phone today. Every kid has a computer or a tablet, or, you know, you got these images of these babies playing with iPads. I mean, it's amazing. I wonder what that does when they're so young. Let's grab a call or two because we have a minute left. The number here, 888-914-9149. Taking a look at how being online has altered society, the impact it's currently having. There's some new data out on it. We're speaking today with Dr. Gene Twenge. Betty's listening in Arizona. Hi, Betty. Good afternoon.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on actually what she just had said now is the content that you're going on for. It's not so much the length of time on your phone or your online.
Right.
It's what you're listening to, because I'm very thankful to have it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be listening to Relevant Radio because I'm in an area that this is the only way I can hear you.
That's
so
awesome.
I'm just, you know, thankful for it.
Well, Betty, thank you. You bring up.
And I just think, other than, you know, rather than the amount of time you spend on it, it's what you're listening to when you're on it.
All right. You bring up a great point. I'm glad you're listening to Relevant. That's a healthy addiction. All right. Yeah, stay tuned. And again, technology makes that possible. I have people in somebody who wrote to me from South Africa last night, and people in Europe and Asia who write into the program all the time. So they listen through this technology. To her point, though, is it about exposure or is it about content? What are your thoughts on that?
It's not either or. It really is both. Because, you know, if, let's say you're doing something that is, you know, productive, say a kid is coding or, you know, learning about other cultures or something, great things, right? However, if they get so into that that they're not eating, they're not sleeping, they're not interacting with their siblings or their friends in person when that's possible, that's when you're going to get problems. So you can take it too far. Everything in moderation. But content is big. So if you think about somebody who's using their phone 8 hours a day, Well, if that 8 hours a day is them scrolling through Instagram, that's going to be a lot less healthy than if the 8 hours a day is using the Maps app because they're a pizza delivery person.
Yeah, right.
You got to think about content as well.
That's true. That's great. Hey, Betty, thank you very much. Just in terms of where we are, we're talking a lot about kids. I'm wondering about adults as well. You know, there's that study. It found that 85% of people who have been working from home during the pandemic, they want to keep working from home. And that's been an eye-opener. I know a lot of people, when they first had to work from home, I'm thinking, I don't want to work from home. This is going to be hard. You know, I like my producers in front of me. I like this. Well, I soon got very comfortable with it, found more concentration, better prep. I mean, a whole lot of things. I'm in studio today and it can work from either venue. But what's it like in the workplace right now? What's it doing for people or how people work together, let's say, in a single company? And then in terms of the big picture, too, Doctor, this year's experience, does it permanently influence the balance of how we interact with each other? Or when the doors to the office open again and people resume life as normal, everybody gets back in the saddle and things are like they were? So I know it's kind of two things, but I'll let you address that.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. And, you know, predicting the future is always a little bit of a fool's errand.
Sure.
But I think one thing that you can say is there, you know, we could end up with a middle ground because, yeah, working at home has some disadvantages for not having that interaction. I think it's going to depend a lot on the person. Working from home is really great for family life. You get to see your spouse and your kids a lot more often. You can take kids to activities. You're not spending all this time in the car commuting. Been great for our family. I totally, you know, see the advantages of it. But, you know, when you're not seeing your colleagues face-to-face, it's harder to build those relationships. If you're single or maybe your kids are out of the house, they can get kind of lonely. You know, I think we may end up at some position where some people are going to work from home, some people are going to the office. I wonder if a lot of people are going to go into the office maybe one or two days a week, and that's where we're going to end up.
Yeah, so it's a very different world. All right, let me sneak one last call because I only have a minute left. Mary in Illinois, you are on the air with Dr. Jean Twenge. Good afternoon.
Hi, Dr. Jean and Drew. Hey, I've got a question, comment. I'm not sure how to address it, but I've got six kids. Four of them are older, 19 and older, and then I have a 12 and 11-year-old. And with the COVID, my two younger ones are dependent on the internet and interacting with their friends. And my 12-year-old and I have having a conversation because I was addressing the two younger ones about how much time we all are spending on the internet and social media and whatnot. And we were talking about the pyramid, you know, God, family, school, and then your friends. And she said to me, but her mental health is important and her friends come before school and tours and whatnot, and I was trying to have a conversation with her about it, and I didn't really know how to address it because I know it is really important to them that they have their friends, but they're not able to see them because we're isolated still here in Illinois somewhat. And just how do we address that when their whole perception, or my 12-year-old's whole perception, is that whereas my older kids didn't have the internet, but they still had the need for friends, and they struggled. So I'm kind of perplexed.
Good. Let me let Dr. Twenge respond to you, because I only have, like I said, a minute for you here, Mary. Go ahead, Doctor.
Yeah, so I think for iGen, you're right, that electronic communication, especially during the pandemic, is important. Have them favor real-time interaction, like video chat, FaceTime, or phone, instead of social media, because that's probably your best formula for mental health. So they're going to put a priority on interacting with friends. Have it be in real time instead of the curated content of social media, which ends up usually being so much more negative, too.
Well, Doctor, I got to leave it right there. I'm grateful for your time and for your work. I'd love to have a little bit more time to talk with you, but people can read your book, iGen. I'm assuming that's available at all major bookstores or Amazon. Of course, your website, Jean Twenge, which is TWENGE.com. Best place to get it. Did I get that right, or am I missing anything?
Yeah, absolutely. That's right.
Sounds great. Hey, thank you for being here. And keep up your good work, okay?
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Look forward to our next conversation. It's Dr. Jean Twenge. Again, iGen, why today's super-connected kids are growing up less rebellious, more tolerant, less happy, and completely unprepared for adulthood. Find it online. Only a minute or two left here. And before I wrap it up, Patrick, I know you're a big Jeopardy fan, and I know Aaron Rodgers had hosted Jeopardy, had pretty good ratings.
Yeah.
You were just telling me Rodgers is shocking the NFL and really the frozen tundra more than anything else.
And the NFL world sources say that he doesn't want to turn to Green Bay, and this is coming on the heels of the NFL draft, which starts in a couple hours. So it's
that is
pretty much a bombshell news there from Aaron Rodgers. So we'll see.
Doesn't
what
he
Packers
have a 2-year contract right now? Is he under contract?
Something like
with,
that for a couple more years at least. But they drafted essentially his heir apparent last year in the first round, and
so he
was probably not happy about that and what happened in the playoffs last year. So it'll be interesting to see what happens tonight in the NFL draft if the Packers do anything, or if maybe it's just a game of chicken and we'll see who flinches first.
Yeah, they were so close to going to the Super Bowl last year, and Rodgers is a phenomenal talent. I would hate to see Green Bay lose him. I'm sure there's a lot of cities who would love to pick him up, but you also want to be happy where you are. Like, I wouldn't want to be here if I wasn't happy doing what I'm doing. You know what I mean? I'd rather go somewhere where...
Of course, though, maybe he can go to Philadelphia, and you'd probably like that, don't want you?
He can go anywhere. I mean, he's one of the greats, you know, like Brady and like so many others. There's such great talent out there. We got to watch him greats over the past several years, that's for sure. Drew Brees, another one.
I'm just wondering, did Aaron Rodgers just get bit by the Jeopardy bug? Maybe he just wants to do that full time and forget football.
He said he wouldn't mind.
I wouldn't mind him considering how well he did for those 2 week run. I think he's just afraid
to say he wants to leave football altogether and do Jeopardy.
Joe Buck, is he hosting now? How did he do?
He's going to host later this year for another 1 or 2 weeks.
He'll do a great job at it too. All right, I'm out of time. Kale Clark's coming up. Always good to hang out with you. I'll be back tomorrow. Ken Starr will join me. Don't miss it.